We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John Tetta! What a strike! What a screamer!
It's all there! And a fantastic goal! Oscar back in it!
And here's Lippert, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
The football's back, and that means enough of these fireside chats. It's time for interrupting and jokes that don't land. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith, and you can block me on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. That's right, little fireside chat between Tim and Clive on Friday. If you missed it, it was quite brilliant, I'm told. But I say hogwash. That's not what you want. That's not what you want at all. You want interruptions. You want bad puns. You want names butchered, said wrong, all that stuff. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. Questions that actually are answers and not questions whatsoever. Yeah, we're going to do all of that. And not only are we going to do that, but the hot mic is back. So, look, I do live commentary for the game sometimes, and we're going to include all the podcast members in doing that soon as the technology sorts itself out. But hot mic now works on Android. It works on iPhone. It is totally free. You just put in promo code Arsenal. You can find links to it in my Twitter or the podcast Twitter, Arsenal V Podcast. It's going to be fun, though, because, look, in the past, the problem is like, well, I might be missing the stadium ambiance. Well, guess what? There's no stadium ambiance. So we're going to have piped-in crowd noise. There's going to be me doing the commentary, and I would say, why would you want anti-Arsenal bias from your broadcaster when you can get anti-Arsenal bias from your podcaster? That's right. So join me, Hot Mic, Wednesday for the return of football. Paul's here. You can find him on Twitter at PauseMyPants. Hello, Pause.
Woo!
Clive's here. You can find him on Twitter at ClivePAFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
I booted Tim for having the audacity to host the last podcast, and Scott will be on in the future. I keep saying it, and it keeps not being true, but it is true, and I promise it will happen. Hey, guys, we got a press conference. This is really happening. He ditched the bookshelves. He went with the backdrop, the, what do they call it, a step and repeat. In the industry, they call that a step and repeat. And he gave a press conference that admittedly was largely Aubameyang related. Those are the questions that he got. You can understand why. Aubameyang gave an interview pretty much expressing that he wasn't super happy, I think is the way you'd have to construe what he was saying, you know, that he wished it was done quicker and the communication hasn't really been there. And look, he wants to win things. And any player who's honest would say they want to win titles, and that's what he's about. Clive, before we get into Arteta's comments from this press conference, and we will spend most of the pod talking about that, and maybe just a tiny little bit on Thomas Partey, maybe, I don't know, we'll see. Did you have a sort of visceral reaction to Aubameyang's quotes?
Yeah, I think from my angle, I didn't feel too discouraged by them, and the reason why, I thought he was making things transparent. Think back to Robin Van Persie when he said he was never offered a contract when we all heard that the other day, we just went, ah, what a lot of rubbish. You know, so I think that's because of lack of transparency at the time. We saw the letter and we just made our own assumptions. And you're never too sure what really happened. So when I saw Aubameyang's quotes, I thought, okay, you're letting everybody know. Arsenal hold the keys. You're not saying I'm up for it, but I'm not saying I'm not up for it. It's a big decision for me. I have no offer because there was some chat about an offer being out there. And he's saying to everybody, there you go. It's up to them. And I think some of the quotes from the press conference today sort of follow on from that. It's up to the club to put it into a position where I can say yes or no. And I think he just made that clear. And obviously we are all fans and we are like petrified, right? So that's how I felt straight afterwards. And I was quite happy with the transparency, particularly based on some of the recent ones where, particularly Ramsey, for example, where I feel there's been a level of skullduggery trying to make sure the fans are on side with the player and the club probably doing a similar thing. I feel it's a lack of transparency which drives the narrative. In this case, I feel Aubameyang is being open and honest, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah, and it's a little different, right? Because Ramsey felt like one of our own in some ways. I mean, he arrived as a kid, went through a lot with us, a leg break and whatever. And I think getting Aubameyang at the point of his career where we did, and getting him at the point of our trajectory as a club, you know, that I think had an influence on how we see him and how we will see him as more of a loan, you know, more of a, not a mercenary, that's too negative a connotation, but not one of our own. A player we're lucky to have and we've enjoyed, but I don't think a player that we will look back on as, you know, Arsenal through and through. I certainly think it's fair to say that. And so, you know, if he wanted to go away and try to win titles somewhere else at the tail end of his career, I just don't think anyone feels we have the hold on him that we would have. Paul, again, before we touch on the quotes, though, I mean, Raul gave it real big when he arrived. We're not going to let players go into the final year of their contracts. It's just not going to happen. And now I think we have four of them. Socrates, Mustafi, Aubameyang, and who's the other one I'm missing? There's another one. And
Ozil.
Yeah, Ozil. and there are different circumstances with all of them and different quality levels. But, you know, I think it speaks to the problem we have at a club. The irony is that, you know, we never cratered when we sold Cesc, sold Nasri, sold Van Persie. You know, we bought other young talent. We bought some players. We bought Ozil. We bought Alexis. But once we started losing Alexis on a free, essentially, a swap for Mkhitaryan, and losing Ramsey on a free, and losing players, you know, without getting value and overcommitting to Ozil because we were scared to sell, that sort of seems where the trajectory went wrong. Is this a huge moment for you vis-a-vis Raul showing his noose and his ability to navigate these challenges? And what do you think is the right thing for Arsenal to do to protect our long-term well-being?
Is this a huge moment? No. I mean, I guess, but there's an inevitability about this, I think, and it extends beyond Arsenal. I mean, other clubs are doing better at this, and they're executing better than us, but not all clubs. Like, you can't defy gravity to some extent, and it was Arsene a few years ago, maybe, who was the first to say, hey, you know what's going to happen in this whole, the way contracts are now and the way football's going, more players are going to run it down to zero in terms of their contracts. They're just going to see their contracts out because that's the way the system is now tilted. So, I mean, I approve of Raul's take that, you know, never let it go into the final year, blah, blah, blah. But what can you do? Let's say that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's valuation of himself is significantly higher than Arsenal's. What was our choice last summer or in the January window or any time in between in terms of contracts? I'm not sure what the material difference is, but it's quite apparent that if you're a really top-level player who scores a lot of goals, playing for a team that's lacking in the success department, has funds, but they're very limited. Who has the power? Who determines what happens next? To a large extent, it is the player and his agent. And then you throw in the potential difference in how they value themselves post-COVID-19 arriving, and I bet that gap's widened significantly. I do think it was very encouraging that Arteta was so upbeat. I mean, the guy's either deluded or he can genuinely see a path forward, or maybe it's just the right thing to say when you're restarting the season with 10 games to go and everything in the balance. But there's only so much. I'm not saying Raul's beyond blame. Of course he's not, and we've generally executed poorly in contracts. But whether you're Saka or you're Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, if you were really talented or score a lot of goals, then the cards, your hand of cards is a lot easier play than the other side. You got the moves there. And there's still the other side of it, which is you don't want to be losing the only guy who scores any goals for your team. But if it brings in money, Arteta may look at it and say, well, you know, Aubameyang's one more player in our team who has abilities and limitations. And if I lose him, if I can get another good option coming in, I may be able to get a player that suits me in terms of style. So there's a whole other conversation to be had there. But I don't think it's, yeah, I guess that's it. You can't defy gravity in the market unless you got unlimited budget or you're extremely successful.
I don't want to go.
I bet you find that answer unsatisfying, though.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think now is a good time for me to give it big on my opinion of Raul. I think were I to say that he is a worthless grifter, a fraud with a deep voice and no substance, I feel that that would be potentially hyperbolic and unwelcome. And certainly, while it's possible that I do feel those things, I would never say them on this podcast at this time. So I'm going to keep my counsel at this time. But I have concerns. Let's put it that way. I mean, Clive, we've got the quotes rolling in, and I'm sort of stalling in a way just to make sure that there's no more meat on the bone as we get to it, because we're recording right as the quotes have started to roll in from Arteta's press conference. But, I mean, do you share my concerns about Raul? I think that, you know, putting aside this whole, oh, he only works with his agent buddies and things like that. I mean, and Amy Lawrence's reporting, which, you know, obviously I think there's been some people who have contested it, and I think there's some self-interest in the way that was contested. But, you know, it does appear to me that we are being helmed by someone who maybe is carrying more interests personally and relationship-wise than purely the long-term sporting benefits of the club. Is that fair?
It's an opinion, and yeah, it's a debate, I think.
Maybe it's not fair.
And, you know, the way I see it, myself and Tim were speaking about it the other day, and I thought he's really, he said something that's stuck with me. He sort of said, what are their KPIs? And we talk about Edu at the time, and I thought, well, actually, what is it that people care about from leadership? And they really just want to see us be smarter and better than our nearest competitors. They don't want to see people walking out on the free. They don't want to see strange people walking in on a free. They don't want to see people walking in injured and not playing for 6 months. We've done that 2 seasons on a trot. We don't want to see our top players, you know, overpaid, underperforming. We want to see people exiting at the right time, maybe just before they start to go downhill, not just after, so we don't get value. We want to see a club that's just smart in the marketplace on incomings, outgoings, and development. And if you've got a little bit of time on your hands, how about improving our commercial deals as well? And that's really it. You know, that's what we want to see, right? And we've got visibility now of our financials versus our competitive landscape. So that's it. It's really easy, really simple stuff. We're improving in some of these regards, and we have some trust issues in some of these regards. And I think, Elliot, you're one that's not very trusting.
Yeah, well, and there's some stuff in the ether. Let's be clear. I mean, I'm not going to, I will not comment on speculation, but there's a lot of stuff in the ether that I think is fairly negative and concerning about Raul. But the problem with referencing that is, you know, unless you're willing to go public with it, or unless it's substantiated and clear, like, you are commenting on speculation. I certainly understand that you don't want to besmirch someone's reputation purely on hearsay. So I try to balance those things, you know, with what I see him actually do. And that's why I thought this might be a big moment for him, Clive, because one thing that we know is he
he told us very clearly, we're not going to let players get into the final year. That's not something we're going to do, and we're doing it. And we're doing it on multiple fronts, and certainly with one huge player in Aubameyang. So, I do think this is our first moment to see whether he can make good on one of his sort of campaign promises, so to speak, if that's fair.
So what I will say is we've got a way to go with trust with Raul, or maybe a little bit to guard into Edu, but less so because we know him. We know he's got a great left foot, right? So we know him. So we're learning about Raul. We're not too sure how he operated previously. We're not too sure how his track record are. Also, we're still trying to judge him. So there's a lack of trust there. So we can only go on what we see. And the David Luiz deal is maybe one thing that's questionable, but maybe not. Right? So going forward, he's had a, you know, I think it would have been an interesting summer, normal. This is not a normal summer. So we have a situation where everything's pushed forward 2-3 months. All the contract deals that would have been signed have not been signed due to lack of clarity what's going to happen post-COVID. Now, we can only say, and I went out of my house today to the shops for the first time in ages, and it looks pretty normal out there to me. So the situation is changing, right? As the shops are opening and real life is starting to happen again, okay, so we all know the virus is still there, and it could go back, could come back again and re-spike. But the world is trying to get back to some form of normalcy. And I think football will then soon follow suit. We're going to have a game. We're going to start seeing the players. We're going to see how they are. They're going to start talking to us again about football, what they want to do, where they want to be, how they feel. Are they losing games? Are they winning games? And all the variables that we know and love that we've forgotten about for 3 months or maybe parked to the side of our brain will all come back in and start to allow us to make decisions again and drive a broader set of opinions. So I'm prepared to sit on my hands for 2-3 weeks to wait. I have my suspicions, but I don't really care. I think I really care about the next day rather than yesterday. And I think they've got a chance to prove to us during a period in it where the club absolutely needs his leadership to be aligned, on board, supportive beyond the self-sustaining model. We need a sense of alignment that the players have shown with the pay cuts, by the way. So, you know, it's coming. The light is shining, Elliot. It really can be shining on them soon. And then when we start seeing our near neighbours, Chelsea, opportunistically dive into the market ahead of us and are stocking up good players at reasonable prices ahead of time, Arsenal fans won't sit there and watch us, you know, shop at a lower level shop. We're not going to Woolworths anymore. We need to get back up there and start buying properly.
Yeah, well, that is definitely something we have to do. And I think, again, the thing that makes this hard, of course, is you have to have nerves of steel to run one of these clubs with an eye towards the future. If you're not just, you know, a plaything of a billionaire. I mean, technically, we are an asset of a billionaire, but not a plaything of a billionaire. Important distinction. Because at some point, you have to do unpopular things like sell a Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang because you can't afford to lose him for free. Before we get into that debate, let's start to break down some of these quotes. And they are all on Arsenal.com now. And Paul, on Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, on his future, Arteta says, quote, "I think it is our responsibility to make him feel this is the right next step in his career. In order to do that, he needs to feel valued. He needs to feel he belongs to us and we want him. And then he really needs to believe that we can take the club forward in the way we want to do. And he is going to be a key player to do that. At the moment, I am extremely happy with how he's been performing and behaving. I have a really good relationship with him where we can discuss face-to-face a lot of things. As far as I'm aware, he is very happy at the club." He goes on the contract situation. "Well, I think in a different context, we would like to do things much quicker, but obviously we've been really tight with time and communication. These are unprecedented times, yada, yada. We are a step closer to getting back playing football." So I think the really important quote in here, Paul, is he really needs to believe that we can take the club forward in the way we want to do, and he is going to be a key player to do that. Aubameyang did reference wanting to win things. I mean, I tend to think players at this age are more concerned with protecting their long-term financial future because they know it's their last score. How much for you do you think is purely a number, and how much do you think really does boil down to the competitiveness of the club?
You know, Aubameyang, I think, is a little different. And, you know, what can you really tell? But there is all of that stuff that he's been good enough to play for Real Madrid. And that's always been his dream club kind of thing. Mm. But he's been at Dortmund and he's been at Arsenal, and Dortmund when he was there were better than Arsenal are now. So it's definitely about money. It's about status. It's about his last big paycheck. It's also about his last big shot to play at the top. And those things are often the same thing. So if you're him, why wouldn't you look at what your last move is and what your best option is? And in looking at, for example, the Real Madrids of this world, maybe a deal comes off for him that he likes, or maybe it doesn't, but it won't hurt his negotiation with Arsenal. So how's it turn out? Maybe he doesn't even know at this stage. On the other hand, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. And unfortunately, the sword is held in Arsenal's hand in the sense that we got this guy under very similar circumstances, which is a few years at Dortmund, quite a few years, proving his worth to the club and then looking to position himself to get a better move elsewhere, with very similar kinds of statements where, you know, he's good, he likes everything, but it's up to the club to kind of position themselves to go forward, and, you know, it's not really him, it's them, and he's been waiting to hear from the kind of thing. The words may not be exactly the same, but the tone is kind of positioning himself with the fans while being open to a move. And I guess we'll find out when we find out. But obviously there's going to be a limit to our budget, which is going to impact how much we can offer him financially and also impact how much we can convince him we're about to change everything and become much more successful. We're not going to throw way more money at it than we have over the last few years. We've thrown a lot of money at it. What we can throw at it is a new coach who he's already working under. So he's kind of seen what it is that he's going to see going forward. And yet here we are, and here he's pondering his future. I do have to remind myself, though, he's 31, I believe. And so we'd be signing him up till he was 35 for a shitload of money. And
it just feels like the same mistake all over again, doesn't it? I mean, haven't we been... Clive, come back in here and then maybe let me rant for like 90 seconds.
Well, I think he's 31 on Thursday. I think he's no ordinary 31-year-old. We can all see that. Athletically, he looks like a 28-year-old, 27-year-old. So, and his skill sets, he's no longer making 50-yard runs in behind like his early Dortmund days and St. Etienne days where he was a sprinter from the halfway line. He's making sharper movements. He's got the ability to make small movements in the box and score, so like Gary Lineker used to. So he has got time. So if Arsenal gave him a 3-year contract and after 2 years he went to America or went somewhere else, then that'll be absolutely fine. Right. So I'm thinking a 3-year contract, Elliot. What I will say is when I sort of look at the quotes, I do sort of sense that, you know, Arsenal can afford to pay a set wage. Maybe not the Ozil number, but something in the high twos, no problem at all, right? So they'll just make room in the squad to do that. But I do think he's asking for Arsenal not just to pay him a certain number, but also to match his sporting ambitions. And that means to give him some support. Make sure we do have defenders. You know, make sure we have some central midfielders. I think he has some sporting ambitions, not just about winning. You can't guarantee winning, but competing. And we need to be competing better than ninth in the table. You know, we really do. And I think what he's saying is, it's not just about signing me. It's about really being competitive as a club and as a team. And that will make me want to sign. I really feel that. And I quite like, I think that's admirable. You know, I think it's not, you know, anyone can just take their wages. You know, we've got a certain person doing that at the moment. Anyone can take their wages. How much do you care about the overall group and its overall competitiveness? And you should be driving that while you're in a position of strength. And I'm hoping that Arteta's using the player and his situation to drive the executive leadership back there again to really start doing their jobs in a more rounded way. And we're waiting for it. We're sitting here conditioned in the month of June when these things are already happening. They're not happening. We're literally 3 months behind. We're in March. but our brains are saying we should be doing something soon, and it just isn't happening. We just have to, adjust to that, and I'm afraid, mate, we just have to trust and hope it works out.
And yeah, can I nip in just before Elliot's rant?
I mean, it's probably the only sensible thing to do. Yes,
because Clive was hinting at something.
Calm him down, Paul. Calm him down.
I've had a lot of caffeine, guys. I'm not gonna lie.
But I might not be able to calm Elliot down, but maybe I can extend a point Clive was kind of making, which is, I agree, he can't imagine that we're suddenly going to win the Champions League or the league. But the one thing Arteta does have some control over is setting Aubameyang up to be successful, at least in his area of the game and how he plays, so that he can show himself off, so that he can enjoy himself. And that kind of makes sense out of the quotes that Arteta put in there. What Arteta could do is set up the team so that Aubameyang is no longer, for example, playing from the left to accommodate other players. And maybe he still plays from wide, but that the team, at least in the front half of the pitch, is set up for Aubameyang to be successful, that he is the star. That's the one thing between now and the next few months that Arteta can prove to him to encourage him to stay, which is you won't just be a star player in our team. You'll be the star player around which we build our team for the next few years. And here are the players we'll allow to profile and support your talents. And here's the profile of players we're going to go out and get, because we're going to build you as the centerpiece of our attack, which we haven't really done in the past, Mr. Aubameyang.
Look, the problem with millennials like Paul and Clive is that they never want to take their medicine. They want everything to come easy. I'm kidding. That is a joke because they are old. It is not a joke about millennials. Okay? Everybody settle down. At some point, you got to take your medicine. And it's not going to taste good and it's not fun. But you can't keep using the excuse that we're going to spend our money trying to get into the Champions League next year. And if that doesn't work, cratering the club. Everything we've done the last couple of seasons has been win now predominantly. Either we've spent huge on stars, or we've spent big on overage players. We brought in defenders who are old. We bought Lacazette and Aubameyang in consecutive windows. None of it's gotten us where we want to be. Okay? As I referenced earlier, when we lost Cesc, Nasri, RVP, it was all so, so painful. And nobody wants to go through it again. Alex Song, who could possibly forget the pain that caused? But we bought, we replaced, we retooled. We finished top four. We won FA Cups. The rot sets in when you plan short term. And keeping Aubameyang, you know, look, I agree with you guys on one thing. He is an athletic freak, and he is going to be good longer than most. But if you give him 4 years at 220 grand, you probably have 2 years of dead money. Or at least 1 year of dead money. And he's not going to score 26, 27 goals in the Premier League at 33, 34. He's not. You know, time is undefeated, right? Father time is undefeated. Never has it been any other way. And so I think I love Aubameyang. If anybody listens to this podcast, they know he's like my favorite player in the team by far. He's the best player we've had since he's arrived. It would be a pain to lose him. But losing him with some money in our pocket that we can use to try to build a winner down the road beats losing him for nothing, or worse, losing him for nothing, having given him tons of money we needed to allocate other places at a time when he is moving into a declining period of his career. You just have to take your medicine at some point. And the reality is, no, we're not going to win the Champions League. We're not going to win the Premier League. We can't match his sporting ambition. We can't promise him that. And I'm not sure I even buy it. A player going into his, you know, 30s, really into his 30s, not even just entering them, wants a contract to get paid because he knows it's his last one. And so I don't see how we can do it. And there are people going to say, oh, well, where would we be without his goals? Well, where would we be without his goals and no money to replace him? You know, maybe you don't get an Aubameyang back because there aren't many Aubameyangs, but you get something. You know, when signing him for another contract, because you think, well, this year we'll claw into the Champions League. Well, we had him this year and we're sitting ninth in the table. It's not, and I realize that that's an Emery factor and the Arteta factor and all that. Again, I just don't think it makes any sense to keep trying to push the boulder uphill one season at a time, only to have it crush you rolling backwards under the weight of the bad financial commitments you've made, especially now when money's at a premium. So, right. Yeah, because then I want to get to the Saka quotes and some of the other stuff and zero in on a few other things Arteta had to say.
Yeah, what you said there makes perfect sense, and fiscally it makes brilliant sense. And when we lost all those previous players, at least we got some money back from them. We didn't like where they went, but at least we got money for them.
Yeah, probably not enough, to be fair, but...
Well, we had something to rebuild with, right? So we didn't, you know, we got Giroud, for example. I'm not wishing to start.
No, we got Alexis. We got Ozil.
Yeah, we got Alexis, you know? Exactly.
I mean, and I know nobody likes those guys right now, but for a while, they were pretty darn good.
Yeah, and we reinvested, and players come and go, you know, mind you. Yep. Players, you know, there's always another player around the corner, and I'm always on YouTube discovering new players. What I will say is, whatever we decide to do, somebody big is going. So if Aubameyang stays, Lacazette's going. It's as simple as that. And are we going to go younger? Because you can't have two players entering their later career and on big money. It just doesn't make sense. So what are we going to do with Ozil? Are we going to give him away for free and let someone pick up 18 million of his last year? You know, there are decisions to be made to rebalance our wage bill and rebalance our ambitions, rebalance our age profile, because... As always, in most companies, the highest paid players are the older players. And we've got Louise, we've got Ozil, we've got Aubameyang, we've got Lacazette. These are big money players, and probably Kolasinac, actually. Probably is right up there due to the fact he was a free transfer. We have some work to do at a time when there is no market. But this is going to be interesting. What do we do? This isn't a normal year. What do we do? There could be a situation where a club may offer 20 million for Aubameyang, and someone may say, do we keep him and then let him go for nothing? Because the value of him for one more year is worth that 20 mil.
Can I make one point on that just real quick, though, Clive? We can't pretend the market only affects one player, right? So if Aubameyang's only worth 20 in the new market, his replacement that we'd be looking at isn't going to be what he would have cost either. You know what I mean? If the if we get less selling Aubameyang, odds are you can use that money to get more than you would have previously. You know what I mean? It's not like Aubameyang's value plummeted, but everybody else has stayed the same, you know?
The interesting thing, though, might be liquidity in that there may not be a lot of players in the market.
Fair enough. Yeah, sorry, Clive, I interrupted, though. No, that's what I'm here to do. It's good to interrupt.
And I think the way it always works, though, we tend to sell cheap and buy expensive, right?
So, yeah, weird.
we're back to Raul again. So we're back there. We are just, everyone seems to be nicking our players, but when we go in, we pay top dollar. We just need to be smarter. And I do support the club of Aubameyang, actually. I think he's more than just a football player. I think he represents a lot of what people like in Arsenal. If you look at all the youngsters today that are supporting Arsenal because of Thierry Henry and Ian Wright and Patrick Vieira, you need those players that give you a little bit of stardust. I really don't feel... You know, I do criticise Ozil, for example, on his output, on purely on a football analysis point of view, particularly from when he went from number 11 to number 10. There's a lot of people in the world that support Arsenal because of Mesut Ozil, and it's all part of our profile. So with Aubameyang and his persona and who he is, I quite like him. I would like to see a different balance in the team. I would like to see maybe something else rather than Lacazette. Purely to freshen up the attack and give teams new problems. So there's just so many variables. Yeah. I can't predict it, but I'm prepared to go either way.
Sorry, and this is where I kind of wish we had a Sven or something, because I would sell Aubameyang and I would let some guy with a spreadsheet buy us a 15 million pound diamond in the rough and hope for the best, and let Martinelli play more as striker and use Saka on the left wing and give Nketiah some minutes, even though I'm not a huge Nketiah believer, obviously, but, you know, go for it. See what you can do. Build for the future. I mean, just to put in perspective how wrong we get it sometimes. Not me, but other people. like, we had genuine arguments online, because that's what we do online, about whether we should have been selling Alex Iwobi. There were people that were outraged we were selling him, people that were sad to see him go. Can we believe that just not even a year ago, feels like a million lifetimes ago, we were arguing whether we were right to take 40 million pounds for Alex Iwobi? We just have to swallow these pills sometimes. I mean, that's one you can point to and say, we did it right. We got maximum value out of a player who wasn't going to take us to the next level. Now, I realize you have to draw a distinction because Aubameyang is the kind of player that could take you to the next level. Different situation, but I'm just saying, sometimes in the cold light of day, you can build a better team by selling than by holding on. And I still think there are people that are scarred from the era where we were a selling club predominantly. And maybe that era is going to be coming full circle, because I mean, even losing Mustafi for free, you say, who cares what's the market for Mustafi? Losing Socrates for free, who cares? But if you could have gotten 15 for Mustafi two summers ago, or if you could get five for Socrates, or, you know, just a little bit here and there, you start buying some players that you can rebuild with instead of losing everybody for free. And who knows, maybe players will use Bosman's, whatever, more, and it will be less in control of the clubs, and it will be more of a pure free agency type model like we see in some American sports. So a few other quotes. So let's touch on this one, because not enough angst yet. Let's get angstier. Asked about Saka, Arteta said, "We are trying, as a club, to finalize the deals that are more urgent and are a priority for us. The ones you are talking about, Bukayo and Oba, they are both really important, not just for now, but for the future of the club as well." Paul, we are trying. It's not the most glowing comment about Saka's future. I kind of wonder if this thing is going to go pear-shaped on us now. And I sort of wonder a little bit if the wage deferment thing and Arsenal players winding up looking like the only ones who wound up doing it, bar a couple other clubs, will have anything to do with this either. You just never know which players felt more taken advantage of than others. But do you have a sense on the Saka situation, and do those quotes fill you with any more dread, or you think they're pretty ambiguous?
Well, the way you put the emphasis on the word "try" terrified me. But
that's not how it reads. I know. We are trying as a club to finalize the deals. Yeah, I know.
He's explaining where the priorities are, which is to say, yes, Mr. Reporter, you're right. We're trying to put our emphasis on the deals that are on the bubble, and that's Aubameyang and Saka, for example. Saka is infinitely more solvable than Aubameyang. And if I'm Saka's agent, I'm saying, Saka, you just stay quiet for a while, enjoy your football, leave it to me while I negotiate you one hell of a deal. And, you know, Saka's looking around at your Jadon Sanchos and your Callum Hudson-Odois and stuff on zooming along. I doubt that he wants to move anywhere but be at Arsenal, where we have a crying need for his abilities. It's home. It's everything he understands right now. He just wants to get paid, and he'll leave that to his agent. And like whatever money we're talking about for Saka here, that's the kind of money we can afford for a guy that will get better and has all the years ahead of him. So even if we overpaid for Saka, it's not the crime that overpaying for, say, Aubameyang would be, or overpaying for half our squad would be. If we've to overpay for Saka, so be it. The downside is, you instead of paying, you know, whatever, the 65,000 per week in terms of salaries and some agent fees that you wanted to pay, you end up paying 75,000-80,000. The only real downside is the knock on to other negotiations for other kids in the squad. So that seems like a very solvable problem. And if Saka can't get his head around that, or the club can't afford to get their head around it, then we're obviously in deep doo-doo, or Saka probably is going to be a problem child going forward for wherever. But I just feel Saka has always been one of those. I've never been that stressed about it. A little stressed, but not that stressed. And we do have players. I mean, if Tierney stays fit and Martinelli and Reece Nelson come through and keep performing, etc., we have some level of cover if the guy left, and I'd hate to lose him. But we should get a very decent fee if he leaves. That's the worst case. We have some level of cover with promising youth as well, but I don't think it'll come to that. But it does lead into the I'm not all doom and gloom about it. I think Flan, who we follow on Twitter there, all of us, and chat to, you know, he had a fairly optimistic quote this morning, and it vibes with me, which is, it's going to be a very interesting few months too. With all the downside, there's the upside, and there are interesting players, and maybe I'm a bit higher on the young players than some others. But it's going to be interesting to see how Arteta begins to shape the team going forward. But we got some problems to work our way through in terms of deals and negotiations, and I think the one unsolvable might be the Aubameyang one, because the ball's really in his court.
Yeah, look, the one really cool thing about the extra substitutes and all the games coming thick and fast, we should get a really good look at the young players. And Arteta should make it, if it's not mission one, probably mission two, priority two, should be to really feel like he knows what he has with some of these young players by the end of this period. You know, he had glowing praise for Eddie Nketiah in this press conference. Mm-hmm. We know he likes Eddie. He says, we treat Eddie as an important part of our squad. We had to make a very important decision not to let him go out on loan again after the spell he had at Leeds. I watched him train, and I'm convinced that he is the right player for us to move us to the next level and that he can contribute in a big way to the way we want to play. He has been fantastic so far. That is not the comment of someone who's like plucky young kid that I think can make it at Arsenal. That's a comment that says more like could be our striker. You know, it really feels like he believes that. And I think if that's the case, then this is a time he needs to really double check that, especially given that our main striker could be going. You know, and he does say that with the extra substitutions, you know, we have to use the young players. We have to use them. We have some really talented young boys that are asking for chances. I'm sure at other clubs the situation will be the same, and I think at some stage we'll be forced to use some of them with the amount of games that we're going to be playing in that space of time. So yeah, this is really the chance. Clive, you know, one thing that I think with Saka that we just have to, another bitter pill we have to swallow, and one of the reasons you can't be giving 31, 32-year-olds 220, 230, 240 is the days of being able to give the young British kid from your academy 40 grand a week to keep him when he's breaking through are gone. We have to put Saka on 80, on 100, on 120 maybe. I mean, that's the money he's got. You know, 120 might be what it takes to keep him. But if you're putting 18-year-olds on that kind of money, it puts a lot of pressure throughout the squad. You know, what does it take to keep a Martinelli away from Real Madrid? Does he have to be on 140? You know, I know it feels early, but that's what you have to do to make sure you don't lose your young players. So, do you agree with that, or do you think that it's not his time for that money yet?
I think the longest contract we've given was Hector Bellerin's contract 3 years ago. I think it was a 6-year contract. I think it was quite early, just over 100 a week. And
he's quite a unique human being anyway, just in terms of his priorities and principles.
Yeah. It was a good bit of projection. It looks good value now. It looks really good value. And I think, you know, we need to get up to those close to 100. Again, I don't think the money is the situation. I hope it's not an issue. What I find really interesting is how we use the player. Again, I think it's a sporting issue. He's played a lot of time at left back. Not a lot, but he's broke through as a left back and really made an impression. He's had time at left wing. And the most interesting thing for me, he's been tried out in a position which I think could really be a position for him, which is the left number 8, and which it basically encapsulates the attributes of a left back and the skill sets of a winger, and almost provides that left-sided wing fielder, Kevin De Bruyne, a type player that swings ball in from an angle, can shoot from the edge of the area, can shift and move the ball, travel with the ball, get out of pressure. I mean, this kid has got a lot of talent. I would throw the kitchen sink at him to keep him. I was talking to a guy on Twitter the other day, Clock End Italia, and he me and him were talking, and we both were saying about a left 8 situation, and it's something I said online a little while ago. I can see him potentially being that player. And when I found him, how he played in the friendly, I was really, really pleased and really keen to see how that went. And he said he could potentially turn into our Clarence Seedorf. And I look at Saka, and I look at his body type, I look at his muscle density, and I look at him in contact, how he rolls people in duels, how he drives away from people. I thought it's a fantastic analogy of a player. And everyone thinks he's left back and left winger, but I urge you to watch him, what he does in contact, when he goes into the ball with people and how he gets away from them. When he's on the wing, he waits for them to get close and he rolls them. He uses his backside and he rolls them around. That is the skill set of somebody that can play in a crowd scene. The fact he can play in big space as well. The fact he can assist. The fact he can score. I would throw everything at him. Everything at him to keep him. Because if he's doing that at 18, what the hell are we going to have at 20 years of age? Mm. You know, what are we going to have? We're going to have somebody can play in three positions already at 18. We don't know how their left 8 looks, but I've got a suspicion that's going to be where he ends up. And you just don't even think about it. If you've got to lose Aubameyang, I wouldn't like to, but I get it. If you've got to lose Lacazette and you've got Eddie and Martelli in behind, And then what you do, you lose Lacazette and maybe buy a left winger to create the room for those players to play, spend more time centrally. So you've got players who can play left, you've got players who can play central. So you buy a left-sided player. You have your right side covered with Nelson and Pepe, and you're looking good there going forward. And you've retained the players you want to retain, and you've lost somebody just to pay the bills, and that's how it goes. And maybe Maitland-Niles will fall in that category as well, to pay the bills, and that's no bad thing. And I know we get into transfer type podcast. Maybe we should do that one later.
Oh, yeah.
But that's how I would do it, and that's my ideal situation. It's nothing against the players. It's just business.
Yeah. Paul, you have a rejoinder to that?
No, I'm with all of that. I mean, I don't think it's a million miles from what I was hoping to say. You want to hold on to Saka. At least that's one we can afford to do. The market's going to be tough out there, but it's not going to be like you see Lacazette's agent talking about how it's all going to be swap deals and trades and stuff, and you're not going to see the big money moves. I think that's true for players who are in the middle or towards the tail end of their careers. It's particularly true of Lacazette. But man, if you're Saka, you are the commodity the market wants.
Yeah.
That's something, you know, 20, 30 million as a fee will get Saka bought by all sorts of clubs. So I think the Lacazettes of this world are going to have a really tough time. Saka's going to find himself really easy to sell in this market. He's affordable with massive upside. He's the guy everybody'd want to spend 20 or 30 million on getting him into their club or whatever the valuation might be. But I don't think he'll want to leave. And we can make it all good with his agent. We can afford to make it good for Saka, and he's a guy you'd want to hold on to. But you know, Clive's assessment of him is exactly right. You look at the guy playing on the wing and you realize he can kind of do anything with the ball. He's so clever. He's so quick that he can operate in central spaces quite easily. He'd fit the Wenger template of start them out wide, get them bedded in, comfortable with the game, accommodate themselves, and then move themselves centrally. You know, he's everything we dreamed Thomas Lamar might be for us, but we own him. So it's just got to happen. You got to make it work. I think he's got a good disposition, and I think we can find an arrangement that works for everybody, and it should be doable.
Yeah, I mean, this is the point, right? Like, let's say, I don't know, you take the money you're thinking of putting 30-year-olds on. And instead, you put Guendouzi and Saka and Martinelli and maybe Saliba, depending on, you know, how he develops or, so, you know, something like that on that kind of money. And then after they develop and maybe even win things for you because they're so good, maybe you get 270 million pounds or 300 million pounds for the four of them. I mean, what is a world-class center back, a world-class central midfielder, a world-class winger and a world-class forward worth at 24 years old, 300 million pounds or more. And now you're doing a Dortmund because you're not, you know, rebuilding, you're reloading with the money to do it and maybe even some success under your belt. So, you know, hopefully that is a model that we can follow and we'll see. Paul, stay with you just for a second because it's an issue close to your heart. I know you are definitely an Nketiah guy. You like Nketiah. Mm-hmm. You believe in Nketiah, which, you know, by the way, nothing wrong with that. I certainly think these are glowing comments about him from Arteta, and they are in keeping with everything he's shown us about Nketiah, that he trusts him, that he will use him in big moments. I think sometimes overly so, but certainly if there's a striker in there that can be an Arsenal striker, that would be quite a coup. Do you have any sort of new ideas about Nketiah? I know you've always liked him. How do you feel about Arteta's confidence in him?
Well, those are glowing comments. Again, he's kind of leaned further into it in terms of Eddie there. Makes me think that we have three strikers right now, and Arteta will be happy to go through the next window with two of those strikers. If he kept Aubameyang and Eddie, he'd be pretty happy. That's what those comments say to me. And with Lacazette and his agent kind of implying they're looking at their options in other places, it tells you that what he sees in training and maybe, I think people think of Eddie as a goal machine, which he could be. And for us at times has been kind of in lesser games, lesser competitions. But what he gives Arteta is a player that he can imprint his style and his approach on. I think he got quite a bit of criticism for the fact that when he was at Leeds, he didn't play that much. Implied criticism in the sense that the loan or the player had been something of a disappointment or a failure. And I always felt differently about it. Even if he only played a few games, and he played quite a few at the end of the day, he played half games, full games, games in cup competitions, etc. But all of it was under Bielsa. And all of it left him with a life lesson, which is it's not good enough to be a bit of a stud or be a bit of a star. The days when a striker could be so good that all he had to do was be great at the striking part of it are gone. There he was, dropped for Bamford on a regular basis, which, to be fair, he was the established player. It was already in place. He was on contract long-term versus the loanee. Eddie comes in trying to make the grade. But what he learned was it wasn't good enough to be more talented than Bamford. You had to operate within the system and give every other player on the pitch, in the at least going forward and to some degree in defence, you had to do the work that justified your role on the pitch. And I think Arteta will really enjoy having an option like Aubameyang and an option like Nketiah as a striker, doing the work, understanding the system. And Bielsa, I think the training that Nketiah had at Leeds, the fight he had on his hands, and you could argue he was beginning to have some success in that fight towards the end of his loan. I think his last, something like the last two games Eddie started. Now there was a little injury there, but sometimes that's what it takes, an injury with Bamford or whoever to get you in the side. So anyway, lots of projection there because we haven't seen enough of him. Yeah, I love Eddie as a prospect. I think he's a real goal scorer. But I think what Leeds impressed upon him and what Arteta will leverage is the fact that he now understands it. Sometimes goals ain't enough or the hope of goals isn't enough. It's what you do when you're not scoring goals that will get Eddie on the pitch.
Yeah, and look, I would say this, and Clive, I'll let you have a word on him as well, but if you wanted to lump three players together for me, Nketiah, Willock, and Maitland-Niles, I am a skeptic on all three of those. In that I don't necessarily see any of them being Arsenal quality. I think Maitland-Niles should be sold now. Get the $20 million if you can, similar to an Iwobi situation. Don't fear his upside. Collect on him. I don't think Willock will make it. Now, Willock is interesting because physically he's quite an interesting body profile for midfield that we've lacked, and he can score goals from midfield, but I think his passing, his technical skill is not enough. I don't think his tracking back is good enough for midfield. And Nketiah is interesting because, as we've seen with Lucas Perez, even a mediocre backup striker can cost you a lot of money and still not be very good. I don't think his ball skills are particularly good. I don't think he's a great passer, but if he can get you 8 goals a season and you own him relatively, and it's not expensive, you don't have to go out and overpay for him. Having a second or third striker who can get you 8 to 10 goals in a season and not paying for that is hugely valuable. Not to mention that strikers mature later in their career, and so you could sort of stick it out with him. I think if I had to ride it out with a player, the one who gets goals is the one I'd go for, and that'd be Nketiah, and then I'd probably sell the other two and reinvest. So, Clive, I mean, how do you feel?
Are you sure his ball skills aren't good? I'll leave that to you and Clive.
I don't think he's a great passer. I really don't. And, I mean, I obviously with any of these players, we have very limited sample sizes that we're drawing from. So I admit that any conclusions we draw about any of these players are based on limited access to what their capabilities are. But, Clive, I mean, Do you tend to agree with that assessment, that if you were going to put, if you had to back one of those kind of players that's on the more of the fringe of the young players, not the superstar breakout kind of players, that you'd go with the guy who can get you some goals and have a role as a backup striker?
Yeah, I like all three players. I do sort of agree. I think the one that really interests me the most is Willock. I think he has. I finally did a video out on him today by a guy called Brazil Scout, and I posted it out and got a lot of responses on it. And
hey, Clive, can I ask you a question? Guess how many appearances Willock has had for Arsenal this season? I was astounded. Okay, it's high.
To about 20?
31 in all competitions.
Wow.
Now, it might be 3 minutes or 4 minutes, but yeah. It's amazing how useful, even in a limited sense, he's been. So, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Look, I think he's a talent I'm getting used to. I'm starting to look. I look back at a lot of games while we've been on lockdown, and a lot of our good moments, Willock has been around it. A lot of the games that we won, Willock has played in, you know, so, or had decent results in, or decent performances in. He's been around. I watched the two games at Anfield, fair enough, and have a look at those again if you can. I know we lost one, and we lost them both, actually, but have a look at those games again, and look how he competed against very hard-running Liverpool team. And he's doing that at a very young age. He's got the ability, when the ball comes to him, he challenges his opponent. He challenges his opponent immediately. You know, it's like an instant thing. I'm going to take you. I'm going to take you backwards. I'm going to run you backwards. I'm going to flick it round you. Get it back. Everything's on the go. Everything positive. Everything's go forward. There's so many players that pass square have good stats, but he's prepared to nick it, move it round the corner, flick it round the corner. And we just had a player gone to Juventus to do that sort of stuff, and we used to criticise him as well, right? So I think this boy has got something, and we just have to wait to see him develop. But the problem is, in the current system, people look at him and say, well, what is he? Is he a 10? Well, he doesn't keep the ball like us, or doesn't pass it, hasn't got that trickery. He scores goals from an attacking midfield situation. If, to me, he's a free eight. He needs to be one of the eights. And it's funny enough, the other day in the Brentford game, they played Ceballos deep, they played Willock one right eight, and they played Saka left eight. And that's Arteta. I already like him, but I mean, he's just thinking straight away, that's the player you are. You're a young, tearaway Jordan Henderson player. That's what he used to be when he was at Sunderland and breaking through, scoring. Looks rough around the edges. One good pass, one bad pass. But you've got to see beyond it. Got to see beyond it. Look at his age. Look at what he's doing. Look at the goals he's scored. Look at the teams that he's trusted against. That's full of potential.
And imagine him filling out a little bit. Like, yeah, he's very skinny. Imagine, like, muscle and bulk. Look at the plodders that play at big teams. Your Eric Dyers, okay, you won't get too excited about them. But look at a number of the midfielders Tottenham have used over the years.
Hey, whoa. Let's not do that.
I think when you're assessing young players, look at Eric Dyer. I've always been critical of Eric Dyer. But you look at his legs, they're like tree trunks. There is no growth, there's no potential, there's no movement. He's got shoulders the size of a wardrobe. There's nothing there. He can't keep up. He can't look after the ball. He can't look after the ball. He plays safe. He can't run backwards. And when he runs forward, he can't stop. He's not agile. He's got a smashing shot and a smashing free kick, and he can head the ball in the box. That is it. There's nothing there. There's nothing in the future. You look at Willock. Look at his body shape. Look at his type. Look at his pace. Look at the slimness of his legs. Look at his agility. Look at the tricks he has. Look at the various tricks. Left foot goals, right foot goals. He needs to work on his recovery defensively. He needs to do more of that. He's 20 years of age. He's not perfect. Absolutely not. But my goodness, that is.
And yet the managers
exactly
use him, right? So, yeah. Like, he's listening. They feel some level of safety. Now, imagine him just filling out and being this solid lump who's mobile, etc. We don't have another player remotely like that in our squad. Somebody who's mobile, large, physical, takes instructions, can learn. So I don't know. I'm with you, Clive. I don't know about Willock, but I certainly haven't written him off the way certain people around here have.
I've always felt this way about him, because I used to think back and think, well, why is he getting so many minutes? He's no good. You know, just a couple of years ago, I think, why is he ahead of Maitland-Niles? He's no good. I think, why is he getting ahead of Marcus McGuain? I can remember saying it. Why isn't Ben Sheaf getting minutes? Why is this kid getting minutes in the League Cup teams? And I generally questioned it. And then I've started to look at him a bit more closely. And I'm thinking, you know what? I can see it now. I can see it clear. And it's something I when we record this one, we're recording it, but in a few months' time, let's have this conversation again, and let's see where we are, because I've got a funny suspicion we're going to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I'm very excited to watch. Look, one thing that's funny, when we opine on a podcast whether or not we rate a player, that's not us opining that we don't want them to succeed. It's just whether we believe it will happen. I mean, yeah. I would love for Willick to be the new Ramsey Vieira hybrid. You know, I would love that.
New Eric Dyer hybrid.
Fuck that. Absolutely not. Like, I want to be clear about something. Eric Dyer is a very, 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 very bad player who is bad at football and is not good, and no one should aspire to be him because he is so bad at football. Okay, I don't know if, you know, the problem is I do, sometimes I feel I'm too nuanced on the pod and my message is lost. So I've tried to be a little more clear there, but maybe it didn't get through. All right, final thing here. So Arteta had a funny line planning for Manchester City. I can't believe it. We got a game coming up, folks. He says, I have to focus, I have to focus and I have to try to convince my players to focus on what we have to do. We cannot control everything that Man City does. It's impossible. Even if we want to, and I will drive the players mad in order to do that. So I just try to convince them on what we can do to try to beat them, what is the best plan possible for us to have the best possible chance to compete in the game and to win it. Let's see how much we are able to do that, because here it's easy, but to go there on the pitch and show up for 96 minutes is different. You know why I like this quote? He's acknowledging that you will drive your players crazy trying to control everything the opposition does. Remind you of any coach that was here before Arteta? I think Emery did drive his players crazy trying to do that for every game. And I like the idea that he's saying, look, you know, they're a tough challenge, and they are, but we're going to focus on what we have to do. And, you know, that is certainly something we're looking forward to. Clive, I have no idea what to expect. There's no way to predict who will come out of the gates and look ready to play football, but I think it is fair to say, on the balance of what we were this season when the season last left us, we would not really have been much of a match for Manchester City. How are you feeling going into this one?
Yeah, well, like, you know me, I think we're going to win every game. So I think
10-0 though? 10-0? Are you as confident as I am? Because I think we're going to win every game 10-0.
No, I think a couple of interesting things to note. Right, so centre-back partnership, I'm not sure who it's going to be. They will be rotated, obviously, for minutes. It's going to be interesting to see who he picks. Will he go with Luiz and Mustafi, which potentially was his first choice pre the lockdown? Or will Mari get in and Luiz flip over to the right-hand side? So that's going to be interesting. If you noted that Granit Xhaka really hasn't had any minutes or at all, I'm not sure if he's injured. I haven't read anything. But if he's not playing, we're going to look quite young in centre midfield. Guendouzi comes into that, Maitland and Niles comes into that, Willock comes into that, Torreira's probably a little bit behind fitness-wise, Ceballos comes into that. So we're going to look quite young and light in central midfield. That's going to be
I wish I looked young and light, just as an aside.
That's going to be a problem. Hence why maybe he's looking at Saka inside for a bit of, you know, maybe, I'm not too sure what we're going to do, 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-3, 4-3-3, sorry. And obviously up front, we're pretty well stocked up front wherever we decide to do. We've got enough rotation players there. So for me, it's a central defence partnership, what he decides to do. But most importantly, centre midfield. I think wherever we think about Xhaka, he's a constant. And we've grown used to him. And he flips into that left half position really nicely in the pre-lockdown system. I don't see a replacement for what Xhaka does. And the closest is probably Ceballos. But he needs to be in an armchair, cuddled with people around him, because he's not very leggy. So that's my worry for the Man City game, because their midfield is pretty good last time I looked. So that could be a worry.
Paul, I assume you have no such worries.
No. So
as they say.
No. This will be all of the piss. I think we're going to get drilled.
All of the piss.
Yes. Okay. It's going to be like a constant bath and shower of piss. No, we're going to get drilled by the only thing we have in our favor is if they've been out so long, they're not quite firing in the final third and they don't put their chances away. But they're so far ahead of us, just in the fact that it's kind of the first game back. They've an established way of playing. They have a bunch of players that can play within that system, so we can pick the players most ready. Whereas Arteta has all three problems. He's got to pick a team that can play but also stop City. So His options are limited. His players are limited. If the right players aren't at the right level, he's even more screwed. And he doesn't know what he'll get if he does something different. You know, Guardiola's team have been through every iteration. He has 2-3 players who can play any role he wants them to play. And everybody knows how they play at the club. This break for us would have done us no good, because now your players will be confused between pre-Emery, Emery, and Arteta in terms of the roles, etc. I mean, sure, they're doing it in practice, but it ain't the same as in the heat of the game. So I just think this is a game too soon for us. Mm. It's a throwaway game. It's just as well. You know, we were never going to win this. We barely had a chance to draw this game. I think our chances of drawing are better than they would have been in the previous regular season. Our chances of winning are minuscule, as they were before. So no worse than it was before, but I still think we're going to get drilled.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say about it is this all feels like a free hit in a way.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know if that makes it better because the pressure's off. I don't know if the lack of fans in the stands and the young players, you know, will just adapt better, or maybe being a little more loosey-goosey against a team that is so ruthless, you know, that extra 5% of focus that you struggle to come up with will absolutely torment you against a team that is, you know, really a well-oiled machine, right? And maybe they're not. Maybe that's the benefit. Maybe it's that the automatisms that you see under Pep Guardiola aren't really there yet. They're not back to full speed. So to your point, it's hard to know what we will see. I do think that I can't explain why, but it doesn't feel like there's a ton of pressure right now. You know, and maybe that's because what attenuated connection we had to playing for Champions League now feels even further away in the context of what's happened with the season. So I don't know what we'll have to see. I think we can leave it there. Don't forget, Hot Mike going to be doing live commentary of the game, with crowd noise and all that, fake crowd noise, just like you'd be hearing on TV, and you won't have the usual anti-Arsenal bias on the TV. You'll have it on Hot Mic. Paul's on Twitter, Pause My Pants. Thanks, Pause.
Woo!
Clive's on Twitter, Clive BFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name's Alex Smith, the Blackman on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. Give us a 5-star review, if that's still a thing. Sign up for our Patreon. We would adore you if you did that. Although I know these times are not always easy for everybody, and if you can't do it, absolutely understand. Just happy to have you with us here. We will be doing our transfer specials with Clive and some other experts coming up as the summer draws closer. I guess it is sort of summer already. We'll see. And we may have a surprise inclusion, a regular surprise inclusion to the pod to announce in the near future. So stay tuned for that. In any event, now I can say it. Now it is upon us. It is Premier League Eve, at least vis-a-vis the podcast. And I can't wait. I can't wait. Maybe I won't feel that way 10 minutes into the game, but I can't wait. I hope you're excited. Football is back, and boy, do we need it collectively, all of us. We love you so much for being here with us for all the weird, random nonsense through this layoff, but now we can get back to the usual nonsense, and I can't wait. So we love you, and we will talk to you after Arsenal 10, Manchester City 0.